It's time for Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. Dwayne.
Hello.
Niall.
Hello.
And me, Brian. No Anthony as yet. He may show up if he's got his car fixed.
He'll arrive in the Batmobile.
So, I have had a hard week of trying to watch anime. I wasn't even sure I was going to be on this podcast. Or if I was, I wouldn't have watched many of the shows, because Sky Broadband in my local area have been absolute shite for the entire week.
And there they go upstairs, a bit of like a fluctuation in signal.
So, let's get going with... There was no One Piece, there was no Dragon Ball this week. I was going to do One Piece this week, because it's going to be the final punch.
Yeah, I mean, the most important things were Luffy turning into a big fucking gorilla man, and that motherfucker getting punched in the face.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, I'll have to wait a week for that, I think.
Oh, yeah, I was in the company picnic or something.
And a week for Vegeta to beat up Frost. So let's get going with the show I barely watched any of, and that would be Erased. Someone tell me what happened.
You've been in a coma for 15 years.
That's what I felt like with my internet connection.
Not you, Satoru.
Let's see. So I'm trying to figure out where we started. I actually really like the intro of this one, where he's been edited out of the intro.
Yeah.
That was really fucking good. Erased. It's like, oh shit. Yeah, literally erased from the intro.
It's the name of the movie.
Because initially I thought they just got rid of him, his adult form in that, and I thought the kid one was there. It was like, no, actually the kid's been taken out of all these scenes as well. That's fucked up. But yeah, we kind of, I guess kind of cut, and he's been in a coma for 15 years. So this is actually, he's younger than when we started the show, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. It has a whole kind of thing over there where we see like his mother going about her day to day.
Yeah.
She's
just working
work.
In a supermarket or something.
Mm. Yeah. Well, that's her real job anyway.
Yeah.
She's having lunch in the park. She's staying there for a while as if she's waiting for somebody. She's coming home to the house. She's making dinner, but there doesn't seem to be anybody there. And there's like little, like, curios and reminders of Satoru, and always got his little superhero mask and the album. And I think, oh god,
when she was passing what must be one of the few fucking record stores that exists anymore, and she bought that, like, the record of his favorite superhero thing, I was like, oh shit, is he like dead? And she's like listening to this thing to remind her of him, kind of thing. Ah, jeez.
Reality is less sad. He's actually been like caring for him in a catatonic state for the past 15 years or so. He's just been in a coma since, I guess, with the details that I've been established as yet.
No.
Seemingly like somebody or someone's kind of pulled him from the river anyway, but, you know, obviously they're a bit too late. Oxygen deprivation, and put him into a coma, and she's been caring him for all this while until he finally wakes up.
I also like the intro bit where the teacher is talking about how fucked up he truly is and has been for his entire goddamn life. I think that's the one time I would have preferred to be watching a thing with earphones in, because that bit where he whispers at the end would have been way creepier.
I'm talking to you, Star.
It was creepy, but it was like it was also felt like, no, he's going through this like very long like analogy.
Yeah,
and they just had to go to the end. Oh yeah, I'm talking about you. If it hadn't got that, Mr. Villain Man.
The visual symbolism is a lot more subtle in this episode, and that was like right on the fucking nose. It's like, yeah, I get it. I get what you're talking about. Okay, it's fine.
Well, let me explain to you my evil plan, Mr. Villain.
Just think back to that Last Supper picture, and this is not a show which does subtle.
No, that's fair. It's a little better this time around. So when Satoru wakes up, he's kind of meeting all his old friends again. It's weird. They look like, because it's, I guess, anime design, they look like the child's heads just on an adult body.
Yeah.
Captain Tsubasa all over again. The heads stay the same size. The bodies just get bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yeah. Well, on the plus side, Hiromi's put on a little bit of weight, so at least he's filled out a little. So it looks... It doesn't look as weird, his head.
He could be like totally ripped under that suit.
You don't know. He's not a businessman. He gets business done.
Yeah.
But,
I found the kind of interesting thing here was that before, like, when we have Satoru goes back to when he was a child, and you have him, no, he's speaking out loud in his child's voice, but his inner monologue, his adult voice, here's the other way around. He's in his adult voice, he wakes up, and his inner monologue is his child's voice.
Yeah, it's kind of the thing of that he's lost his memory, so that's really weird, and it's a really nice kind of inversion of that. Whereas as a kid, he was kind of like, has the mind of an adult, so he's empowered in that way, but is weak physically. In this one, he's weak physically as an adult and has a kid's mind in there, because he doesn't remember that he had an adult's mind when he was a kid. It's kind of confusing to try and think about it. So it's kind of like it's sticking an extra vulnerability on top of that by changing that inner monologue voice. Yeah. It's also because I guess that voice actor wouldn't be working on it then. This episode does a lot of good stuff. And I don't know about you, but I felt like it went really quick. They managed to cover like a lot of ground by introducing, it's like, oh, here's the new status quo. Here's everyone. They're all doing pretty good. That kind of thing.
This is coming to the end of it now, I'm sure.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So they have to get it over really quick. But, it felt like it did a lot. So I felt like the episode actually went by pretty quick.
Mm.
I was kind of surprised.
It went by quick for me.
Obviously. But, sorry, go on.
It was that, like, obviously, you know, we get some kind of payoff for all this, you know, going back in time and trying to change things, you know, and then getting targeted by murder if your trouble is in, like, you know, when, you know, if he's visiting the hospital by Kyo, and she's doing fine. She's happily married with a kid. She's married to Hiromi, in fact. And she goes by and says, no, one before I was alone, but now, you know, I didn't foresee I'd have like a family and children and a normal life. So thank you for that.
Yeah, that moment was really good, and I'm guessing there's going to be, like, people who are, what do you call those guys who have, like, the pairings in their head of, obviously, those two when they were kids. But that would have been kind of weird because he was an adult brain in a child's body at the time, if they ended up together.
Yeah, but it's nice, though, like, because he's
just so happy for her, yeah.
So happy, he's been very kind of, like, out of this, like, since we got out of coma, like, you know,
he's not really showing much emotion, really.
There's emotion there, but then, like, he sees her and he breaks out into tears, and after that, she's just so determined then to, you know, wants to double my rehab time when I get well as soon as possible. You know, he feels like, yes, it wasn't all for nothing, like, my life is worth living now.
Yeah, yeah. That's a really good moment, and again, like, the show does those kind of moments really well. And then you have the threatening kind of thing coming around, which is that fucking bastard. He's still around. It was that guy.
He has to come, and he has to come and gloat, and that's his downfall, because he came to gloat in the future the first time to see Satoru get hauled away by the cops, because Yifun came by the gloat. That sets Satoru off, and that enables him to go back in time and stop this murder in the first place now. And it's going to happen to him again now. He's going to gloat, and then he's going to get his comeuppance, I hope, anyway.
Yeah, the amount of, like, foreshadowing is, like, where he's like, hey, I'm creepily watching you and a little girl in a park, and it's like, hey, I'm just going to peel this apple in the most menacing way I know how. I did like it, again, because you're getting kind of the flashback to the prior incident where he's wheeling. It's like, hey, how about we wheel you off in this wheelchair and I'll just take you up to the roof, Satoru. Nothing bad could happen on a roof. And the kind of thing of just the spider web in the corner of the elevator, again, alluding to the story of the spider's thread and you know, spider and fly trapped in it, that kind of thing. There was a lot of nice stuff there. Mm. A bit more subtle than the last supper, but yeah.
Yes. But then he hasn't, because, you know, I'm saying, sorry, Yashiro, I remember everything.
Why would you tell him that? I wouldn't have told him that.
Yeah, why did you tell him that? If we brought him up onto it, there's nobody around and you're still in a wheelchair. Why do you wait until that moves?
I hope he has a plan after telling him that. It's like, not only have I told you this, but I have a plan. Time travel or something, I don't freaking know.
I'm betting his thing is that because he's been, like, really laying into the rehab so much, he's fully able to walk. He's just been,
you think,
like,
he's ripped?
He's been playing this up for the last, like, couple of weeks, you know, to make him seem like he's still an invalid, but he's going to just hop out of that chair and kick his ass, let's say.
So just the last episode was him punching him in the face.
That's what I mean, like, half hour long fight scene. It's going to end like, it's going to end like Blade Runner now, where he's like, he's hanging off the side of the edge and then.
Yeah, I'm enjoying this. Niall, you said you weren't enjoying it as much. Did this episode pick it up for you?
Let's put it back up again a bit. Okay. This was an outcome I didn't think it was going to go for. He time traveled. Kind of, but in the slower, more natural way that we all do.
Yeah, he's time traveled like, you know, like standard humans do, one day at a time. He just fell asleep for the entire.
Yeah. I'm glad I didn't go do that. No, he's in like the, we cut to him in the side episode. He's probably in the car. He's underwater for one saying, oh, I wish really, 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 really badly I could go back in time and stop this. Anything he can do.
This was yesterday or something. Yeah, that would have been too cheap, I think.
Now, the thing is, if he stops the guy now in this slightly before the start of the show, if he gets him arrested now, then does he travel back to 2006? For the very last thing. Just a couple of years in the future.
What, he falls asleep for another 3 years, is it?
Not fall asleep, no, but naturally bounces back as he's done before.
Yeah, well, it's like you said, like, unless he time travels, he probably has to live those years. maybe we'll get a summation of, like, 3 years this time. The last episode will cover 3 years of his life.
I guess, like, you know, he did foil him and all. Nobody was murdered, including him. His mother's still alive.
Well, has this guy not murdered other people in the
years? Some think, you know, that, you know, like 15,
when,
15
when he
years
says, like,
is a long
oh,
time.
I married into this family, and then the father died, and I inherited it. And I was like, sure, he fucking died.
Yeah.
Or was he like, oh, well, I'm not going to do any more murders till that kid wakes up. And then I'm going to gloat, kill him, and then I'll get started again.
Yeah, that's, I mean, like, he seems to be the kind of guy who would do that based off what he was talking about with the hamsters, with that analogy. He was like, oh, that guy survived, I guess I won't murder anymore. Yeah, that seems to be the suggestion, that he's crazy, so I guess he doesn't really need his motive need to be explained that way. It's not really a motive, he just wants to kill for the laugh, like. I don't know, I'm really enjoying this. It kind of takes some turns, despite, like, you know, predictable ways in other regards. But I'm really liking those little moments of humanity and stuff. It still does that very well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see they did a digest episode of the first 6 episodes.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh. I was just listening. They're listening to this podcast right now. Like, this is where we get Brian to watch.
I watched those 6 episodes, though. What they need to do is digest to the next 6.
Well, they will. Give them time. They'll finish it off.
Yeah, so that's a raised. Oji-san and Marshmallow, episode 11, I do believe. And they say, we're not going to give you any resolution to last week's.
No! I think this is kind of bullshit, because before they'd been really good at cramming that amount of stuff into, like, what is it, 3 minutes? 3 minutes something amount of seconds.
Yeah.
But in this one, it's just like they're just drawing it out, making it a fucking three-parter at least so far.
Well, this is something entirely different, this was.
Yeah. This is completely unrelated.
This felt like...
Last week that happened, you know.
Yeah.
This felt like, maybe if you buy the DVD, there's an episode 10.5.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a clever way to get people to buy DVDs, is just leave the resolution of stories off the TV airing.
It's a dickish way if that's what they're doing, but yeah.
So this one's Hot Springs Trip and Marshmallow. In which we finally get a chance for a load of boob gags in the show.
What do you
mean? I have boob gags already. Loads of them. Equal opportunity boob gags too.
Oh, I guess that's true. When the guys were listening to the ladies play with each other's boobs in the hot springs, what was your man doing? He seemed really uncomfortable with the situation.
He did, yeah. I don't know what he was doing.
Had they all dragged him into it? Also, that fucking brother was there listening as well.
Yes.
The fuck? I don't like that guy.
He's there to protect his sister.
Why is he enjoying listening to their shenanigans then?
Because he's a creep.
Yeah.
And the boss appears to either have a son or a brother, somebody who's got the same cheekbones as him there, who I don't think we've seen before.
Oh, that's true, actually, yeah.
At this hot springs, just so happens that the two workers from the marshmallow factory are staying there as well.
They're also visited, and she has the great idea to put marshmallows in hot spring water?
Yes.
Which is like...
Well, they've proven everything else.
Warm marshmallows, good. Wet marshmallows, not so good.
Well, that's like, but I know, you put marshmallows in like hot chocolate, so...
Yeah, but hot water is different. And also, do you drink hot spring water? Certainly not the one you bathe in, at least. Anyway, it's but an odd
the
idea.
The younger one agrees with you, though, Dwayne, doesn't
it? It's a bad idea.
Which leads to a marshmallow going flying and landing in Miyoko's cleavage.
Yeah. I was wondering where that was going to go, because he is freaking out at that dinner.
Yes, that's because he smells of marshmallows. So she realizes she finally clues in on Wakabayashi's tactics of luring him away with marshmallows.
Yeah, but she's really obvious about it. It's not like she's disguising the fact that she's roasting marshmallows with a little Bunsen burner she has.
And so we end with another cliffhanger as Wakabayashi recruits the two marshmallow workers as they are determined to ensure that the fairy stays a fairy. Can't be led astray by this temptress.
Well, you missed a bit where what's her name? The woman who does the design, the graphic designer.
Miyoko.
Yes, where she tricks her Wakabayashi's brother into... I don't know, it's like, hey, your sister's looking awful lonely over there. And he's like freaks out, obviously, because he's a weirdo. So he gets protected by bumping into one of the marshmallow factory workers, and she has the buoyancy to just flap back up and knock him out. That was amazing.
It was a pretty good gag.
Yeah, and again, not fucking resolved. I guess from the last episode, are we supposed to think that Wakabayashi has given up on Hige?
Oh, no,
you know?
not in this. No, she's...
Yeah, but it
determined.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, it seems like if it was the case that she seems to be kind of off him for the entire episode, but it's just determination at the end. Like you said, it seems like there's a piece missing. Very annoying, but...
I guess if there's just a piece missing in the original comic and they kind of got to work with what they've got.
Yeah.
Make up your own ending.
Who knows? I don't know whether next week's the last episode or whether it's just carrying on going Muko style.
Maybe they'll just disregard it and screw this decision to something else entirely different for the next week's episode.
That's true, yes.
and the guy playing Hige cannot finish that marshmallow on... was that on waffles or something? I forget what that was. He cannot finish it in 4 seconds, which isn't surprising. That's like... That was a big one.
It's like a whole marshmallow sandwich.
Yeah.
That'd be hard to eat in a good day.
Yeah, apart from the disappointment of not getting any resolution, this was still a perfectly fine episode of Ojisan and Marshmallow, I thought.
We feel a little cheaped out by not getting the amount we were getting within three episodes.
Yeah, you see, I don't know. I kind of admire not giving you a resolution.
Right, right.
There's the sick part of me enjoys the fact the audience has to get sit there and go, what?
dear.
Right. Let's go with Seko Boys then. We had another cliffhanger last week.
Yeah, but this one follows up and it's an emotional roller coaster.
It is. As the boys decide they need to go and bring their manager back.
And she's gone home to live with her parents who, like... I think if anyone at any stage in their life has ever had to go back, even temporarily, to live with their parents, you know exactly what this is like. It's like, oh, we got a nice job set up for you. Oh, how about you clean your room? I got some gardening for you to do tomorrow. And it's like, ah. Oh.
Yep.
Oh, that's why I left over the first place.
It's pretty good.
It's pretty, and the parents' designs are great because they both look like they would be her parents. They're like close enough in character design, but not like just. Exactly the same.
Yeah.
Well, like in the thumbnail for the actual episode of Crunchyroll, no, like, you can see someone is sitting in the front seat of the car. I thought it was Ishibo, but actually it's her mother because they're kind of wearing a similar outfit.
Just with a few more wrinkles, yeah.
And so she remembers back in art class where she discovers the bust of
Agrippa.
Yeah, Agrippa. What was the teacher's advice? Like, always go back to Agrippa. It's the most basic form. He'll tell you what's what from what.
You know? Meanwhile, the boys decide they're going to chase after her and bring her back and apologize for their terrible behavior.
Well, good.
They should do. They're terrible.
Well, they knew she meant business when she blapped at you on Twitter. It's like, oh my goodness.
He's being a real dick. It's like, dude, fuck off. And he kept like doing this like romantic-y shit. It's like, listen, I'm the most beautiful man who knows about all these things. And I cannot apologize enough. And it was just like run on sentence.
Send her an email. She's getting up against the game on her phone every 5 seconds.
Good stuff.
And so, yes, she agrees to come back. They apologize, and they have a huge party at Medici's house.
Oh, and their former manager has his back fixed because he's wearing some sort of metal belt?
Yes.
I'm not sure what that was
about. It's one of those like weightlifter belts, for a back brace.
Yeah.
And Agrippa, the bus she kept in storage since she was at high school, decides to talk all of a sudden with loads of bad Agrippa-based puns.
Yeah. It's like, wait a minute, you were alive too? Yes, all busts are alive in this world.
That can't be true. Because there's multiple busts.
That's terrifying, right?
Yeah, I think they get possessed by who they represent occasionally.
Right.
Maybe the influence of the Psycho Boys arriving outside the house, washed over him, and he kind of came back to life. There were kind of magical auras that allowed them to both be able to talk and sing and also be in a boy band.
But then we're left with another cliffhanger. As they wake up from the party and they discover Medici has disappeared and there is a note left on his bed.
I was run away from home.
This time. Yeah.
Has he been kidnapped? This might be a ransom note. Maybe he's been kidnapped.
I think we should have gotten him chipped.
Maybe he's gotten into another pyramid scheme, yeah. Oh, dear.
Yeah, this is a great show. I think this is I don't know. As I say, I think consistency, this can't be beat. I don't think misses a step because it's got no legs, so therefore it can't.
Aha!
let's see if we can stick the landing though next week.
We shall see. I'm sure it will. Right. Let's go to what I think is the best short of the week, though. And that was Lovely Muko. And I can barely remember most of it, but I can remember the end, and that's why it's the best.
Yep.
I'm trying to remember the start of it now.
We have an episode title, Episode 383. Again, could have been Fist of the North Star. Powers Awaken! The ability to enter the pond unnoticed.
She thinks she gains the ability to dry things.
Yes, she does.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah, so she thinks that she can leap into the pond and will be able to just dry out instantly, and Komatsu will be none the wiser that she's broken the law.
I think Muko is just a stupid fucking dog, because dogs, when they're wet, know to shake to dry themselves. So I think dogs know the difference between wet and dry. I think that's a thing they know. But Muko doesn't appear to be like, wait a minute, I understand you mightn't understand evaporation, Muko, but you understand that the difference between how am I leaving paw prints? Because your feet are wet. Why are they gone? Because it's dry now. It's fucking, there's a difference. fucking dog.
Well, it's okay. Ushiko comes by with a little paddling pool and, like, you know, fill that full of water, and then that's fine. Muko can just splash around in there. Well, what's left of it? Ushiko just like a big cannonball straight into it and removes most of the water.
Also,
initially, he traps her in it.
Yeah, he turns up. Well, first of all, he turns up hidden under the paddling pool, just crawling around.
To scare the dog, yeah. Then he puts her underneath it.
And sits on it.
It's like he's a real dick in this episode.
And then the final part is Komatsu notices that Muko's getting fat. And then he comments that she'll turn into Ushiko. The way she's going.
One thing, right, that's his fault. He feeds her and walks her, so to blame the dog for that is a bit mean.
And also his fat friend keeps on coming around with snacks for her as well.
I guess that's true, yeah.
Then normally she refuses to eat those and eats Komatsu's food instead. But yes, so that's the thing which triggers her. She has this horrible image of...
intro sequence.
Yes.
Looking we know the lyrics now, but sung by Ushiko. Yes.
Yeah, that was the weirdest thing. You can't have the music publishing rights to have the lyrics translated.
Unless you get a fat man to do it.
But if you parody it inside the show itself,
yeah,
that's fine. But yeah, you get an opening sequence with Ushiko singing the song and the Ushiko Muko crossover character.
No, it'd be Ushiko. Lovely, yes. Ushiko. Yeah.
Doing everything and sort of.
The rolling around animation was pretty great.
Yeah, and being in love with Komatsu.
Speaking about his fragile, pure maiden's heart.
Yes.
Yeah.
And now I know the lyrics, and I've seen a AMV of the song assigned to another show's anime. It's really weird when it's applied to a human being. It's funny and
don't
cute
love
when
the way
it's
dogs
attached
do,
to
sure
a dog.
Yeah.
When you imagine it's a human singing it, it's a bit weird. There was a Concrete Revolution AMV, is what it was, with the lovely Muko theme. So it sounded like Kiko was singing the song, though. Of course, that doesn't quite work, because the woman who plays Kiko does actually voice somebody in Lovely Muko, but it's not Muko. She voices the little girl.
I was figuring the little girl, yeah.
Would Kiko have been, like, the right choice for that? Surely,
the guy turns into a dog.
Or should he, what's her face, too? Like, no, is a fox demon.
Yeah.
That would have made more sense. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, but she doesn't make as many gooey faces as Kiku does.
Well, it turns out because a fox demon face at one point isn't the same thing.
Right, yeah, that was Lovely Muko. And there's a new character introduced next week.
Oh, yes, it's some guy. Watch out. He's up to mischief, I guess.
Which makes me think this may just be carrying on.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to be stopping.
It's like you would introduce a new character surely 3 episodes away from the end. But who knows? In this world we live in where people set up a cliffhanger and don't give us a delivery of it. Mr. Osomatsu. The thing I just finished watching.
I'm trying to remember the episode name. It
is Kerosene and Daon Tribe.
The Daon Tribe, yes.
And it's kind of it's a two-parter, but really it's a one-parter, because the first part directly leads into the second part. Between them without following the thread between, you might go, I don't see how these could possibly be connected.
Yeah. Pretty much. There's no logical reason for them to be connected, except for the excuse that it sets up in the first part, which they could have just started with, you know, that being the excuse why Choromatsu's out on his own.
So, the first part is another one of these stories where the brothers just get to run through all their personality traits in a given situation. So the situation is, it's cold, someone needs to go and bring some kerosene in to turn the heater on.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say with kerosene or, like, in this kind of thing. I feel like I've had this exact thing happen to me with people I know or family or something. But, yeah, I know this thing.
Yeah, my family would be go and bring coal in from the outside.
Yeah, fill the coal bucket kind of thing,
It's interpretive for the fire, come on.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm pretty sure I've specifically done the Juicy Matsu thing of naming a name. I think it was to Anthony to tell him, it's like, you give us the summation of this episode.
Oh, yeah, we've all done that. We've all done it to Anthony.
Oh, no. so this I think this part was really fucking good. I really love the opening bit. Just because I know exactly. And also, all the dialogue is asides. Like, none of them are out loud, except for Jushimatsu. I think all of them are, like, talking to themselves.
Yeah.
Which is pretty great.
And it's everything they've been doing. It's, like, you know, these kind of grand schemes and all that. And Todomatsu is that he's been, like pouring the tea out for Osomatsu. And then, like, over time, I get up and go to the bathroom. Todomatsu,
you
bastard.
Son of a bitch.
And he just gives him this like leering grin. It's like, you planned this all along. And then he goes to the bathroom too. I have to fill the kerosene. Fiend.
It's kind of like the reverse of the of the Mahjong episode, where they all have strategies in Mahjong, but all suck at it. Whereas this one is like, no, they're actually very good at trying to fuck each other over from doing basic chores.
And so, yeah, Jushimatsu manages to lock Korematsu into having to go out.
It's the one time where Juju Matsu actually comes across as an asshole as well, which is kind of great.
They're shocked as well.
Yeah, because they're all like, "Ah, oh, Juju Matsu wouldn't pretend to be asleep." It's like, that son of a bitch.
He's like that genius. You had it comes over to him, the bloodshot eyes. Maybe he would.
And so, yeah, Chorobatsu goes out, walks past the pub, decides to go in the pub rather than pick the kerosene up.
Yeah, it's a better plan for him.
Osumatsu is sent out to find out what's happened to him. He goes past the pub, decides to go in the pub rather than look for his brother.
It's like a setup for a joke, yeah.
Ditto with Karamatsu.
All the oldest brothers.
Yeah, they were all see them in there spending the money on for kerosene on booze. So this is a much better way to keep warm when your little brothers are shivering at home.
Yeah, and but Dion is already passed out of the bar.
Yes, and they pass out, and then they wake up inside a cave. And inside this cave is a tribe of people who look like Dion.
Yeah, just all kinds of Dion-based stuff in it. Like, they all live in mushrooms or something? It's an odd word.
Giant, like, Dion Asura statue. In the
middle of it. Yeah, yeah.
So the other three go out in search of their brothers, and they meet Dion, who's now face down outside. They turn him over, and he inhales them all inside his own body, because apparently that is where these caves and this tribe live. And when they get there, they discover that the three older brothers have started to turn into Dion.
Because it's
Gordon Native!
Yes. And Chorobatsu is about to get married to a Dion.
The most beautiful Dion in the village. also, he's grown a sweet mustache. Actually, they've all grown facial hair now.
And apparently, this is a great utopia inside Dayon. Everybody's equal. You don't
Everyone's
have to
Dayon.
Work because you just use things which Dayon has inhaled and shrunk inside his body. So, does that mean all the other Dayons weren't Dayons, but they've been inhaled?
They were just people who'd been inhaled. I think there's a lot of interpretation at the end of it. Into. Yeah. But maybe that's why there's so little neats around, because he just goes around inhaling them.
And, Totti sort of... Well, it's Chorobatsu makes a terrible speech, and Totti keeps on pointing out the terrible things he's saying in the speech. And eventually the tribe decide that they've got to leave for their own good. And there's a very heartfelt goodbye to the one woman who loves Chorobatsu.
Yeah, she gets her, like, let me convince you that you need to leave for your own good speech by just saying Dion at him.
Go, get out of here. Can't we see you? I don't want you anymore.
And the Henderson. The tradition for the cartoons where people get trapped inside another person's body is exit through the anus.
Thankfully not animated.
Yeah. Because, I mean, like, the animation in this one was actually really good. I like the recurring joke of the lads going, presumably, down his esophagus, like, screaming, and then eventually getting tired of screaming and enjoying it. It's just like, actually, this is pretty sweet. There was a lot of, like, fun animation in this one. Maybe it's because I can't personally relate to it, but I didn't find this one as fun as the first part, but it's still really good.
Mm. Yeah, for an idea which has been done loads of times.
Yeah.
I think it found a way to add a twist to it. That twist being everybody being Dayon.
I think it was a good swing from this, like, entirely, like, mundane situation that's just been, like, exploded up to, like, ridiculous levels by their own internal, like, frustrations and emotions like that now, and then go from this thing where it's just completely off the wall.
Yeah, I think the point at which in the series that Jushimatsu split into tiny, tiny, microscopic Jushimatsus, I think anything can go after that point.
Pretty much. I think that's more of the crazy things that have been happening since then. Not including stuff that's happened with the pretty boy, Matsu's.
So you want a realistic down to earth show that's completely off the wall and swarming with magic robots. Well, this is that show.
Yeah, pretty much. Like this one, which, like you say, is just one continuing narrative of a plot. Like, it starts in just mundane, kind of household, like in one room based comedy. And then kind of goes into complete surrealism, like, straight away in the second part. And yet it's somehow the same story. Oh, this show's great. I'm going to miss it when it's gone, dude.
Yeah, I know. Mm-hmm. We'll be back.
Yeah. They'd be fools not to,
There's
really.
Money left on the table.
Yeah, exactly.
I just hope we actually get to see Classicaloid when it comes out. It's NHK, though, and NHK stuff is hit and miss. But as long, if it's not a short, I think we've got a better chance of seeing it.
Hmm.
But there's been loads of NHK shorts, which are just not shown up on streaming services at all.
Right.
One showed up on NHK World in English, of course. Sushi and Beyond. But that had a terrible dub. Right, let's wrap things up with Lupin the Third. Anthony will be sorry he's not here because one of these episodes made him cry.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, it was the second one, right?
I hope so.
Oh, first of all, no.
But how, I mean, like, you're going to miss him just sitting there not moving with his hand on his chin.
I don't miss him. He didn't do nothing for me.
dear.
So episode 19, Dragons Sleep Soundly. So MI6 drag Nyx back in because they want him to recover the Dragon's Tale, a CD ROM, probably a DVD ROM at this point.
Mini disc.
Could be, with the names of all of MI6 agents on it.
Which isn't this the plot of the last James Bond movie?
Isn't this the plot of the first Mission Impossible movie?
Okay, yeah, this has been done multiple times, is what I'm saying. dear.
But done exactly like this, because this has a quite a good idea of why it's called the Dragon's Tale.
Yeah.
That
setup is different, and I do like that.
Yeah, because it's like it's not just a cool.
Yeah, it's dangerous because of what contains, but also it's dangerous, you know, because of the reaction that will follow it being stolen and everything down there. They're like, well, man, they've thought of everything, and this is like a hot iron that they do not want to get out into the wrong hands, no matter the cost.
And of course, Lupin's after it as well.
For, like, I assume just to sell it or to, you know, get himself out of jail if he needs to.
Yeah, it says like
he says it's his retirement or something.
When he's like, we say, oh, well, like, you know, we're on MI6's like not like watch list now, so they'll be probably after us now for quite the remainder of our lives. That's why I want some insurance now when we're old and grey.
He's not actually robbing it for anyone or anything. Yeah. Except for himself, obviously.
And of course, the reason why Nyx is doing this is because Percival's threatening his family.
I did like the only way you can shoot Nyx is to aim at his daughter in front of him.
Yes.
It's just like, oh yeah, that makes sense.
You'd throw yourself in front of your daughter. Okay, so the reason called the Dragon's Tale is when you've unlocked the password and view the data, then that initiates a process to destroy everybody in the vicinity of said disc.
They wipe out everyone who's not, you know, themselves. Yeah. Agents just roll in and just kill everyone in there.
Don't tread on the dragon's tail.
Because the dragon will turn around and bite you. Yeah sure.
And we get some good Nyx and Lupin team-up action as they have to fight this MI6 death squad sent to kill them.
Yeah, just pretty cool moments of, like, Nyx with the shit kicked out of him. And Lupin's like, you're not going to give up yet, old man. And him, like, throwing Lupin a gun. This is, like, lots of badass action movie shit going on in this. Also, the way Lupin rushed that dude, just punched him in the face.
Yeah.
That was pretty great. Oh, also, he has one exploding shoe and one telephone shoe.
Yeah. It's very Get Smart.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty great. Dear.
If I'm punching, though, it's when Nyx is, Nyx is dead, and like Percival thinks, okay, well, let us care of that. Out of lift comes Nyx, and he just punches the shit out of him.
Well, it's not only that takes care of that. He's like, okay, plan B, kill his family anyway.
Yeah, because we heard that as the elevator opened. He's like, you son of a bitch.
Yeah, that animation when he faces off is pretty great.
It's pretty good. It's kind of deserving of the extreme rage that Nyx tends to get into. When he hulks out, I don't know the proper term.
Rats out. You call it polyglotma, his superior rat strength.
Pop some veins. I don't know. You really wanted to see that guy get his then. What a dick.
Well, he does get his, but not from Nyx.
Dun dum dum.
Because who should show up but Leonardo da Vinci?
They're just calling him that now. They're not even going like...
So that's like, who that's, he is?
I know, but it's still a little weird to me. So he, also, he knows he's a clone, but he doesn't care because he's still technically Leonardo da Vinci.
So he breaks the thing in Nix's ear, doesn't he?
Oh, that's... Yeah, he flung this...
Jams his finger in his ear and, like, damages his inner ear, so he'll be off balance for a few days until it heals, I guess.
Yeah.
Stress and heat and pressure point called fucking whatever. You'll not be able to walk for a week.
And, yeah, so he gives Percival a chance to work alongside him.
Oh, and he's fiddling with the gun, and he puts it down. He's like, you know, oh, that was fucking great.
Don't fire that gun. Don't fire that gun. He's done something to
it. He somehow turned it into a backwards gun.
Well, I think he just made sure it would misfire and kill him.
Yeah.
So basically, he turns his back to Percival with a gun next to Percival, and Percival's got the option. He could work alongside Leonardo da Vinci to change the world, but no, he just tries to shoot Leonardo da Vinci in the back and dies himself.
Yeah, and I did like when Lupin's talking to them over the phone the entire time, using his little bean emoticon.
Yes.
Lupin knew it's like, oh yeah, so Da Vinci's fine and Percival's dead, and he's going like, oh, I still got that list, and Da Vinci's just like, I guess you don't really need it anymore because I'm fucking running this joint now. That kind of thing. Some pretty good turnarounds in this one.
Yeah, I liked Leonardo da Vinci's judo throw as well.
Pretty good skills. They didn't learn that relatively that much.
This one's quite good.
Yeah, for all that action, this was a lot of fun. And then we get episode 20, To Hear You Sing Again, in which we get somebody's Herbie the Lovebug fan fiction.
Yeah, I was getting a bit of that.
It's like if somebody wanted to like write a very depressing ending to Herbie's Tales.
I think they saw that French film Amour, which tread similar territory, and thought this would go great with a car.
What really bugged me about this one is I like the animation is like way down in this one.
I didn't notice, but I was watching it in the bath this morning.
Well, there's some nice backgrounds.
But the like even the new characters seem off model. Not to mention Zenigata, who looks like 30 years younger in some fucking shots.
Yeah, sometimes.
Oh, yeah, you got. Sort of Fonzie, the car dealer.
Yeah, kind of odd designs. They don't seem kind of consistent.
Yeah, I thought the designs were fine, but yeah, maybe you're right that they don't stay consistent in the episode.
I think my problem with it was like it seems to be like nearly that. You know the way Lupin fucking loves. I mean, the show loves its old school cars, especially like tiny little box cars. And this seems to be nearly like a love story told through that, but the car doesn't look great. You know what I mean? It doesn't have the same kind of life that what's Lupin's things? It's a Fiat or something, isn't it? I can't think.
It probably will be in Italy. Yes.
Yeah. It doesn't have the same kind of movement and bounciness that his car has. Yeah,
I assume it's a real type of car.
Yeah. If not a real type, then certainly based on one.
I didn't catch what they. If they said what type of car it was.
Fiat 500 Topolino is the car from this episode anyway.
Anyway, I like this episode a lot.
Mm. It's a good story. It's kind of like, again, the Lupin thing of him getting involved in someone else's story.
Yes.
Yeah.
But for that sort of story, I thought it did a good job of telling it.
Mm.
Yeah. It's like a bittersweet ending.
Yes,
mm.
But it does set it does stick to the idea of Lupin being this
guardian angel.
Well, no, he's got this. He's this old romantic, isn't he?
Yeah.
Whereas
technically, he's a force.
Fugico isn't.
Lupin, where's the car? And he's like, I lost it, I guess. You know, he's just wandering through the countryside, learning the heart of the car and fucking taking it to where it wanted to go and all this kind of thing. Also the hilariously slow police chase where he's just singing a song.
It's like the cops were told, don't damage the car, it's very, very valuable. But oh shit, what do we do? We'll still see Rossiano, men in this low speed chase.
Yes.
Yeah, a walking speed chase through town.
And I did like the crime aspect of it as well, that he was just stealing this car to raise the price of the car.
again, if Lupin was doing that, I would have been like, no. But if he was doing it for Fujiko, I was like, oh, yeah, she'd totally do that.
Yes. Yes, they're just nicking it for a while and then give it back to the guy who's going to sell it. But Zenigata saw through the plan. But yeah, that's not really what it's about. It's about this romance between the singer and her manager and the car, which was basically their surrogate child.
Mm.
And the car deciding to take them on one last drive, vicariously through Lupin. It's definitely a sentient car. There's no doubt about that in the story.
Some kind of ghost car.
Ah! Well, no, it's still alive because it dies at the end.
Yeah.
He says the car's died as well.
You know, it's like, what's that fucking song about the grandfather clock?
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's kind of situation relating a mechanical device to someone's life.
I think it's called My Grandfather's Clock or something.
Is it? Okay, yeah. Sorry. I didn't realize it was that in the nose. basically that kind of idea with it. It's a good story. I do kind of like it. I think that's the point of it, but your man's standoffishness, it makes it seem like, oh, who's this fucking asshole? But it's kind of, the kind of reveal of that is why he's like that.
Yeah, so I think his design works well. The young and the old version of him definitely seem like he's aged, where her, she's a bit like, it's the same character design, just with grey hair now.
And wrinkles.
And wrinkles, but it looks like he's properly aged and she's anime aged.
Right, okay, that's fair.
But that being said, yeah, it's another enjoyable episode.
Mm.
It's another Erika Yoshida script as well, who did the Day Off one and the Lovesick Pig and the Magician's Left Hand.
Mm.
So I think she tends to get the... the
tragic ones.
Yeah, the tragic ones, the more romantic related ones, and the...
one where Lupin doesn't come across entirely as a dick.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I think she's got one more episode. I think 22 is her last episode.
Okay.
Right, yeah, that's Lupin. Only four more episodes to go.
Yeah. It's been a pretty great run.
Things are coming to an end, but in a way I'm almost glad because there's just the avalanche of new arrivals.
That's true as well, yeah.
It's a good time feed up.
Yeah, next week they go back to Japan for some reason.
What? Hmm. Yeah.
Because there's something Italian in Japan, or...?
It's called From Japan with Love. While in Italy, Lupin gets a call from someone claiming to have kidnapped Fujiko. Well, there you go. That's probably all it takes it to get him to go anywhere.
I thought it was like the lore thing. They'd have to have something related to Italy for an excuse to go there.
Or maybe they just figured they'd throw an episode set in Japan for the Japanese audience. Or maybe they want, as well as Japanese people, to go to Italy for holidays. Maybe they thought we'd get some Italian people to go to Japan for holidays. Righty-ho, that's it this week. We will be back with a special episode, which we're about to record, our spring preview episode.
Wow.
Which hopefully will be out Tuesday or Wednesday.
Hmm.
And otherwise, be back next week to hang with the Let's Go gang. And in the meantime, check out our regular podcasts at secretofthesailormadness.blogspot.com and dynamitingthebrain.com. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.